from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the state's education standards are once again set for a review after a bill was approved by the House today. The House's Religious Freedom Bill is still making its way through the committee process in the Senate, but members of the chamber say they're still unsure about how they'll vote on the measure. And businesses are calling on lawmakers to approve a bill to allow for the sale of alcohol on Sunday mornings. But House leadership says the brunch bill is not a priority. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A senator who filed a lawsuit against the Senate president has dropped his case today, saying he and leadership have struck a deal. Senator John Unger of Berkeley County filed the suit Wednesday in Kanawha County Circuit Court after Senate leadership announced the chamber would hold floor sessions both Saturday and Sunday. Unger is the pastor of three churches in the Eastern Panhandle and said the Senate president was forcing him to choose between his parishioners and his constituents, violating his religious freedom. Late Thursday, Unger announced he and Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael had reached an agreement that the Senate would still meet Sunday but would delay voting on any bills until Monday morning. The senator dropped his suit and canceled the injunctive hearing set before a Kanawha County judge this morning. The House of Delegates approved a bill today to repeal Common Core-based education standards and prohibit aligned assessments. After 3 hours of debate over amendments yesterday, not a single delegate stood to speak to the bill this morning before the vote. Liz McCormick joins us with more.
The state's Common Core-based standards were repealed by the West Virginia Board of Education in December and replaced with the College and Career Ready standards. State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michael Martirano, championed those new standards after an 8-month review process. But some members of the House believe the new standards are too similar to the previous, based on Common Core. Delegates voted 73-20 today to repeal Common Core and require a panel of outside experts to review the College and Career Ready standards and make adjustments. Martirano says he's deeply concerned with the bill that passed out of the House today.
Well, I'm very concerned about the bill, quite frankly, because I don't want to do anything right now that's going to disrupt our teachers any further. Right now, we have 600 vacancies in terms of our classroom across our state out of 19,000 teachers. The constant disruption and shift of our standards destabilizes the delivery method for our educational system. I'm greatly concerned about it because we've gone through our own standards review process. We've listened to the legislature. We have listened to our citizens. We've listened to our teachers, who are my educational experts. We've made changes in our state board. Has repealed the Common Core standards and has adopted a new set of standards entitled the West Virginia College and Career Ready Standards. So I'm greatly concerned when I hear more opportunities presented to us that could destabilize and disrupt our educational system.
Martirano says he's hopeful the bill will see more adjustments in the Senate and not become law in its current form. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick.
In the Senate, members adopted amendments made by the House to Senate Bill 419 today. The bill comes from Governor Tomlin and redirects payments from the Workers' Compensation Debt Fund to the General Revenue Budget to close the 2016 and 2017 gaps. Those payments are made from an additional severance tax collected on coal, natural gas, and timber. The bill expires those additional taxes this summer, but the House amended the bill to reinstate the timber tax. The Senate concurred with the amendments and approved the bill today, 33-0. The bill now heads to Governor Tomlin's desk. The West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act was approved in the House more than 2 weeks ago, and in that time, Senate leaders have said little about the bill. It was, however, on the agenda for the chamber's Judiciary Committee this afternoon. But some members of the chamber say they'll wait to see a final bill before throwing their support behind it. Chris Walters is a Republican from Putnam County. His district includes a portion of that county as well as Kanawha, including downtown Charleston. When the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed the House of Delegates, Walters says many businesses in his district reached out to him to express concerns, saying the bill would essentially legalize discrimination in the state.
I probably would not be able to vote for it the way it stands right now because, you know, I don't think that the Christian thing to do is to be able to let people discriminate in the name of God. And the way the bill is written right now, I've got concerns that may be what it can do.
But on the other side of the aisle, Democratic Senator Art Kirkendall of Logan County says the people of his district support the measure. He's spoken with business owners, religious leaders, constituents from all walks of life who say it's not about discrimination.
The people I know back home that they have a great feeling about their religious beliefs, they don't discriminate against anybody. The people I know doesn't do it anyway. And I don't think there's anything in there that causes discrimination.
House Bill 4012 creates a judicial standard for lawsuits brought against the state when a person claims his or her religious freedoms have been violated. Judges will be required to measure the sincerity of that belief when deciding these cases. For Walters, the threat of legal action is also a concern.
If we create a new cause of action, we create more lawsuits. When we create more lawsuits in this pact, it's going to cost money for the state, for a lot of people. So I'm really worried about creating a new cause of action.
The Republican majority has largely backed the measure, making both Kirkendall and Walters' stances interesting in a chamber where only two votes separate the parties. Both senators maintain they are representing the feelings of their constituents. Walters expects the bill to see some changes before coming to a final vote on the floor. For him, changes to expressly prohibit using the bill to discriminate and protect for municipalities that enact non-discrimination ordinances are a must in order to have his support. Kirkendall, though, says he'll wait to see what the final product will be.
I would have to look at the changes. I like the bill the way it was.
House Bill 4012 was on the agenda for members of the Senate Judiciary Committee Friday afternoon.
On the opposite side of the rotunda, members of the House are delaying consideration of a bill supporters call an economic development measure. The Senate-approved brunch bill would allow restaurants, wineries, and distilleries to begin selling alcohol at 10 a.m. on Sundays instead of the current 1 p.m. Senators approved the bill without opposition, but as Rob Engel reports, there's doubt the bill will even reach a vote in the House this year.
We came here for brunch the last time for my birthday in the fall, and we're a little disappointed to find that we couldn't have a brunch cocktail to accompany my birthday brunch celebration.
That's Janet Tigelar, a regular at Black Sheep Burrito and Brews in Huntington. Tigelar is one of many supporters of the so-called brunch bill, which would move the start of Sunday alcohol sales at restaurants, distilleries, and wineries from 1 p.m. to 10 a.m.
I'm definitely in favor of moving forward with the brunch legislation so that people can enjoy a drink other than coffee with their breakfast.
And Tigelar isn't alone. Over the years, as lawmakers have considered similar pieces of legislation, many West Virginians have made their support known. But passing this legislation has proven difficult. Similar versions of the brunch bill were introduced in the 2013, 2014, and 2015 legislative sessions, but each year the bill has failed simply because it was not a priority for either the Democratic or Republican leadership. Jared Riggs, the manager at Black Sheep, hopes 2016 is finally the year for the right to brunch with alcohol.
Brunch is typically the equivalent of our Friday and Saturday nights combined. So, you know, from a business standpoint, it is the make or break day for us here. We do have a lot of people who are unaware that alcohol sales take place after one. So we do get a lot of people that come in prior to that and either have to wait until 1 o'clock in the restaurant or get discouraged and, you know, come back later.
Riggs says the 1 o'clock start time for alcohol sales can be inconvenient not only for customers, but also for his employees, like bartender Jenna Kath.
We usually get pretty busy right when we open up, and then we die down till 1 o'clock, and then it's a free-for-all for the booze crowd. 1 o'clock, the printer will just keep blowing up, just a ton of tickets coming in. The bar will usually start to fill up and just start slinging drinks as fast as possible.
Now, Jared says alcohol sales on Sunday are absolutely vital for that day's profit. Between the hours of 1 and 2, alcohol sales account for 25% of the entire day's profit.
And Riggs and Kath agree that this bill would help distribute the flow of brunchers on Sundays.
I think it's a good thing. I think it would help business be a little more steady, especially where our brunch menu stops at 2:30. So people really only have like an hour and a half to get the brunch drinks, Bloody Marys and mimosas.
However, the brunch bill may be heading down the similar path this year as in years past. It passed unanimously in the Senate and moved to the House, but House Speaker Tim Armstead says the bill is not a priority as the end of session approaches. Senator Chris Walters, the lead sponsor of the bill, encourages the legislature to consider the economic importance of the brunch bill. Snowshoe Mountain Resort says the bill could bring in an additional $500,000 in yearly revenue for their businesses alone. This is one of the many examples, Walter says, of businesses that would benefit from the legislation.
I think anything that can move our state forward economically should be a priority in this legislative session. Yeah, I hope that he will reconsider. I know there's a lot of support from members in the House, and hopefully they can help push this bill through.
As for Black Sheep, Riggs says they are hopeful, but otherwise it will be business as usual.
We roll with the punches. We're going to do what we have to. We'd love to see the change happen, and we'd love to entrust that we as West Virginians can be trusted to be responsible adults every day of the week.
For the Legislature Today, I'm Rob Engel in Huntington.
While the brunch bill might not be moving in the House, one bill members were willing to debate today was legislation giving counties more control over the construction of roads and bridges. As Liz McCormick reports, the bill would allow county commissions to implement a tax to pay for those roads, which members of both parties spoke against.
House Bill 4009 allows counties to propose and fund road projects by imposing a sales tax that would not exceed 1%. That tax would first have to be approved by 60% of the voters in the county in a referendum. The road plans would then have to be approved by the Division of Highways. The bill has also been referred to as the Mon County Bill, referring to Monongalia County, the county from which its lead sponsor hails. Delegate Joe Statler says roads in the county are in major disrepair due to the amount of students at West Virginia University and overall population growth. There was a mix of support and opposition from both sides of the aisle. Statler's fellow Mon County delegate Cindy Fritch spoke against the bill, saying that allowing the tax will hurt her constituents. Delegate Statler stood to defend his bill.
In Monongalia County, I wish that the state had the issues that we had with growth. I really do. If there's anything I can say to you today, I wish the whole state had these growth problems, because if we did, we'd have a lot of our issues would be settled. Our tax dollars would be rolling. But here's what I'm telling you, that if we don't allow something to happen, if you don't allow us to help ourselves, because the state does not have the money to do what we need to do in Monongalia County today, they may help, but they don't have the money. We've got here 11 projects I got identified from the MPO at over $280 million, and that's only a drop of what's going on, that needs to be addressed in Monongalia County. If we don't do that, then the growth is going to start slowing down.
House Bill 4009 passed 60-39 and now heads to the Senate. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Danny Hamrick was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. He's a Republican from Harrison County. Delegate Hamrick represents the House's 48th District. He serves as the Vice Chair of the House Roads and Transportation Committee. Tim Miley serves as the House Minority Leader, previously serving as the Speaker of the House for the 2014 legislative session. Miley is a Democrat and represents the House's 48th District. He's from Harrison County and was first elected to the House in 2004. Patsy Trecost is a Democrat from Harrison County. Elected in 2014, he represents the House's 48th District. Delegate Trecost serves as the Minority Vice Chair of the House Political Subdivisions Committee. He was previously a member of the Clarksburg City Council and also served as the Mayor of Clarksburg. Terry Waxman was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, she represents the 48th House of Delegates District. Delegate Waxman is from Harrison County.
In 2013, the West Virginia Center for Children's Justice launched a program called Handle with Care. It's a collaboration between the center, local law enforcement, and county school systems. The program is meant to help children who've experienced abuse, neglect, or other types of trauma at home succeed when they return to school. Charleston's Handle with Care initiative is now expanding across the state and in other communities across the nation. Roxy Todd spent a day at the Mary C. Snow Elementary School on Charleston's west side, where it all began.
Mary C. Snow Elementary School is located in a neighborhood where it can be stressful to be a child. The west side of Charleston has gained a bad reputation for drug crimes and violence, and in 2014, the city of Charleston as a whole saw an increase in both criminal activity and violent crimes. While these crimes are usually committed by adults, that doesn't mean children aren't affected by them. And that's where the Handle with Care program comes into play. If a child is exposed to crime, violence, or abuse, police notify the principal and school counselor by the start of the next school day. Janet Alio is the school nurse at Mary C. Snow.
When I first heard about the Handle with Care program, I thought, that's the program for us, because we have probably 75% of our children are in some form of traumatized living environment from a day-to-day situation. Sometimes it's repeated belly aches or repeated headaches. We just had a situation recently where a child who normally doesn't come to the clinic started coming in every morning with a headache, with a headache, with a headache. And so at that, if I see that it becomes a pattern, or if they look like they may be in distress when they come in, then, you know, I will go ahead and talk to them, say, you know, well, how was your night? What was, you know, did anything happen over the weekend?
But it's not always clear when something traumatic has occurred in a student's life. The first step in the Handle with Care program is when police officers send schools a form after they respond to traumatic events with children present.
And this form just merely says the child's name, the date and time of the incident, and that's it.
Ms. Helm teaches special ed at Mary C. Snow Elementary.
When I start to see the emotion coming, I call it to attention and we talk about it.
She says Handle with Care helps teachers modify the way they interact with children who need special attention.
Because when you have a kid that's not typically acting out, then all of a sudden the child's acting out. For a teacher, that can be frustrating. But if you know, okay, there's something going on with that child, then as a teacher, you know, okay, let me look at things differently. Let me try to accommodate the child in a way that would help the child. Or let me see if, okay, I can get the counselor to talk with the child at that time. But I think more so when we know that there's something, then we know how to handle it in a different fashion.
The second step is where the school staff figure out what resources a child might need if they've experienced a traumatic event. Sometimes it's talking with a school counselor or going to the health center for some extra sleep or spending time in the library with the school's therapy dog, Paka. Or, if the parent gives permission, the child might also be matched up with a counselor who travels to the school. This is Ethan Napier and his mother, Lenitra Woodson. They're talking with Colleen Moran, a therapist with Harmony Health Services. She comes to the health center here at Mary C. Snow to help children cope with stress and traumatic situations.
Some of the types of things that we do are teaching relaxation, With children, a lot of times you'll use play activities to do that, such as blowing bubbles for breathing exercises, or teaching them to tense and release their muscles to get rid of muscle tension. If you do it in a way that's a game, they're much more likely to do it, and they don't realize that they're working and that they're making therapeutic progress. Play is a child's work, and that's how they work through things, and that's how they learn, and that's how they make sense of their world.
For many children, just trying to make sense of their world can be a struggle. In 2012, Ethan's brother Jalil Clements was killed when he was hit by a car on the interstate. Jalil was trying to wave down someone to help his mother, who was being beaten by her boyfriend in their car. The mental health center here was named in Jalil's memory. But for children who are left to deal with trauma all on their own, there can be fatal consequences. A report called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study found that children who experienced trauma early in life were more likely to abuse substances, smoke, and overeat. Children who experience abusive and stressful situations could lose as much as 20 years off their life, compared with children who grow up in stable, loving families. But teachers and other adults in a child's life can help if they know what to look out for.
Life does happen, and it's teaching them how to handle things when life happens, that we can still function. You know, we can get the love, we can get the support, the nurture that we need. And basically when they come here and we get that handled with care, basically we look at what do they need and how can we help them, and then we fill in from there.
Ms. Helm recently visited a meeting with teachers from across West Virginia.
And in one of those meetings, a teacher brought this up, that there's so much trauma going on in their schools and they don't know how to handle it because they don't have the handle with care. And they don't know what resources do we tap into. This is an ongoing problem. It's a growing problem. And one thing they was emphasizing there is that they're seeing it more and more in their younger kids. And that's what basically we have here. We're seeing it in our younger kids.
The Handle With Care program has been supported without any extra funding, except for the resources already available to schools to help children who need mental care. The program is part of a collaboration between the Department of Justice and their Defending Childhood Initiative, the State Department of Health and Human Resources, and the West Virginia State Police. These groups are now working to help bring Handle With Care to communities throughout West Virginia. There are also similar programs that have sprouted in other states. When President Obama visited West Virginia last year to talk about drug abuse across the nation, he took note of the Handle With Care program.
And I'd really like to see us advertise this more across the country and adopt this as a best practice.
With drug overdose rates in West Virginia the highest in the country, Ms. Helm says more and more teachers are noticing children who are dealing with abuse and neglect.
So it's definitely more prominent now than before. I think before we always thought it was just isolated to Westside Elementary, but now realizing, no, it's going on everywhere. And people are needing answers, they're needing support, they're needing to understand what is handled with care, because that question was asked there. And what do you do, how does that program work? And so definitely, it's much needed in other places.
But as drug abuse and domestic violence continue to barrage families across West Virginia, there simply aren't enough resources to help children deal with trauma. Harmony Health Services, which provides mental health services to the students at Mary C. Snow Elementary, is working to get a mobile mental health care facility for some of the remote areas of West Virginia. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in Charleston.
Both the House and Senate are planning to hold weekend meetings this week, and West Virginia Public Broadcasting will bring you live legislative coverage Saturday. Join Beth Voorhees for morning floor sessions beginning at 11 a.m. tomorrow on the West Virginia Channel. You can also watch those broadcasts on our website, wvpublic.org. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. We'll see you back here next week.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.